podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. It's Sunday night. We're recording, not that that matters. And I'm Boyd Hilton, and psychic Josh is resplendent in his Soho House style office. Hi, Josh.
Boyd, good to be here. I think it does matter. Important to give context exactly when we're recording.
Yeah, maybe it does.
Just because some people might not listen to this until Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah,
we've got 10 days pretty much, don't we, until the next game. So loads of opportunity.
Yeah, sometimes it takes days for it to arrive as well on the old iTunes in particular. For some reason, who knows? Who knows? It's the mysteries of the podcast world. And we're joined by a staunch regular, Dean of AFC Camden fame, influencer, pilot, beardy man. What else can I say? purveyor of quite good gossip on his Twitter feed, I think. It's safe to say. How are you feeling, Dean?
Feeling good. I also, you're far too generous with that introduction.
It's true. It's
much
true.
Appreciated. Much appreciated. But very good to be here.
Before we begin the look at the game on Saturday, any rumours, any chance that we linked with anyone, any possible? It feels very quiet at the moment. There was a little bit of Benzema speculation a couple of days ago. That seemed to disappear as soon as it started. Anything on the line? Or just the fact that we won 5-0 suddenly mean that we don't need any more forwards? It's all fine and we're all going to be great.
Don't know what the fuss is about, to be honest. You know, five goals against Palace at home, you know, who needs a striker? It does feel very quiet. You know, I'm not seeing much of Fabrizio Romano on my timeline or David Ornstein, which you'd expect to see more of during the January transfer window. Looks like FFP's finally got some teeth by the looks of things. But on the Arsenal front, I would say there was definitely a bit of chat about striker stuff, but I think it's always been the case for us that we needed to sell to buy, and it doesn't look like we're going to be selling anyone this window, Boyd. So, I think the summer it is.
Wow. Oh, dear.
But let's see. Obviously, anything can change, right?
Yeah. Josh, how are you? You haven't heard anything on the grapevine of all of your footballer friends?
Disappointingly not, I'm afraid. It feels, as Dean has said, that... generally, it's been a quiet window. That was what someone I was with last week, who's at one of the major football agencies, was saying across the board. Really, you know, it's just there just isn't the volume of deals going on that has been seen in previous transfer windows, and it doesn't feel like there's going to be anywhere near the action that we've seen in previous years. It has not. None of Arteta's comments have indicated otherwise as well, we have to say. Not that he would be going out and telling us he's in the market, but the whole vibe doesn't really appear to have been that we are. In fact, the comments have been centred around the supporting the players we have and backing them and, you know, trying really to maybe, you know, take some conversation away from the idea that this squad needs improving and, you know, he can do it with this... with this squad. And that was a direction of questioning, wasn't it, after the win, you know?
Yeah.
Is this squad good enough?
Yeah. What do we think? Well, I think I'm delighted as I am that we restored ourselves to goal scoring and winning ways. I mean, Palace were absolutely terrible, weren't they, Dean? And it felt like it was the minimum response really to their terribleness was, and we got two set piece goals that we have had a problem. We are firmly confirmed as the best team at set piece goals in the league, which is great, something to be proud of, I suppose. But we really need to start scoring more from general play. And you know, Trossard, I guess, what did you make first of all? Let's start with this. What did you make of picking Trossard ahead of Martinelli? And did the fact that he scored the third goal from open play mean that decision was justified? And you know, he should take credit for that.
Very interesting one about Trossard, actually, because I don't think many of us fancy him on the wing. He just doesn't have the pace or the power to beat a man, I don't think, out there. I think he looks better in the middle. Just quickly step back to your initial point about Palace. Agree, they were absolutely dreadful, but it was only 4 weeks ago that they drew 2-2 with City at the Etihad, right? So, you know, things can change very quickly in football, and you know, I had a few mates who were pretty nervous about the result. You know, Josh and I saw each other briefly before the game, and you know, we talked about, look, just get a couple of early goals to settle the nerves, because if that didn't happen, it could have been a different game. But you know, I do agree that they weren't very good on the day, Boyd. But in terms of Trossard, prefer him in the middle than on the wing. My biggest takeaway from that move was not necessarily Trossard's performance as a starter, but was having someone like Martinelli on the bench for the last 20 minutes to come on, given the game was a bit more open because Palace needed to score, right? But like, think about being a really tired fullback and then seeing Gabriel Martinelli come off the bench the last 20 minutes, and you know he's just going to do one thing. He's going to either get the ball and dribble at you, or he's going to try and run in behind you. And it was a very, very dangerous weapon to have, I felt, in the last 20 minutes. And I feel like I want to see more of that. But obviously, I want to see Martinelli start games too. So, you know, I don't want to take away from having him in the starting 11, but it was a real signal to the manager to say, look, we need something like that on the bench for games where it is, you know, maybe tighter, but defenses are tiring. Someone who's just direct, who's going to run at fullbacks, who's going to run in behind, even if there isn't as much space that Palace afforded us. So, yeah, I think that was a bigger takeaway for me, Boyd, rather than Trossard starting, because we know about Trossard's quality. I think he's better in the middle than on the wing, and he had a good game. But yeah, I don't know what you guys think about, you know, Gabby coming off the bench and, you know, looking super friendly.
It's a good point. He did come off the bench. And just go back to Trossard a bit. I mean, the thing, I've been a bit critical of him on the podcast, and I'm not fully convinced that he's that great. But the one big, huge plus point, I think, of the Saturday game was the fact that he wasn't taking corners anymore. And of course, Declan Rice took the corner that led to the first goal. Brilliantly, brilliant delivery from Declan Rice. And they've clearly, if one great thing has happened, as I tweeted this on Saturday after the game in the break, is that they've realized one thing that we all realized months ago, that Trossard cannot take a corner to save his fucking life. And thankfully, he's been removed from corner duties. But it's amazing how much difference that makes, isn't it? How important it is to get a good delivery. And Saka, I think, is pretty reliable at delivery. And but that was absolutely key. The fact that suddenly Declan Rice took that corner, really important. And beyond that, I think it is a good weapon to have Martinelli on the bench coming on. I agree with that. But I'm not entirely convinced against, say, I don't know, a really strong, a really good team, Liverpool will be playing fairly soon, that Trossard's going to provide that much in that, you know, in that kind of game. I don't know. What do you think, Josh?
Well, Martinelli had not been at the level that we have come to expect. So I don't think it's good surprising to see him drop to the bench. And it's perfect, right? If you had to say, you're 3-0 up, Martinelli's coming onto the pitch, what do you want to happen? You say two goals, nice finishes. He's doubled his tally for the season in the space of that substitute cameo. Had a refresh. They've all been to, you know, Dubai and hanging out in a bit of sun. You know, the second half of the season starts here. And if that's how Martinelli has started, as he could go on, then that completely changes what we could expect from the second half of an Arsenal front three.
Have you ever seen, sorry to interrupt, have you ever seen two such incredible similar goals scored by the same player in the space of 2 minutes in injury time, in added time? It was insane how similar, like the passes were even really similar, wasn't it? The goalkeeper played a big part as well, but like the passes and his runs and then his finish for both goals was astonishingly the same. I've never seen anything like it. It was remarkable.
Yeah, it was absolutely remarkable. The same finish, Thierry Henry-esque, thinking back to that sort of curled finish into the far corner. But Arteta was asked about it in the post-match conference, and he said as much about how, you know, he referenced confidence, so, you know, acknowledging maybe there had been an issue there with Martinelli, and that he hopes this completely changes things, and we all got to hope so too. What, just talking of things that were, you know, happened obviously in twos, we did think, being there, that Gabriel had scored twice until the second of those had been taken off him. And I was with a friend of mine, Lewis, who you've met, Boyd.
Yeah.
We were then immediately pondering, has a defender ever scored a hat-trick in the Premier League? And we were thinking, never mind has an Arsenal defender, has a... And apparently the closest thing to that happening is Steve Watson scored has scored a Premier League hat trick, but was playing in a more attacking role apparently on that occasion. So it was a bit of a not quite the sort of purest answer in the sense. So yeah, I thought we might be onto some Premier League history there with Gabriel, but then it would have been taken away.
Did you see the post-match interview with Gabriel and Martinelli together on TNT Sport, where by the interviewer, well, I can't remember her name.
Jules Breach.
Thank you. Jules Breach said to Gabriel, they've ruled it off your second goal, sorry. And he completely ignored her and just carried on saying, I've scored two goals. He said it about 10 times.
He didn't understand. And also, what was so sweet, I was watching that interview as well.
I know what you're going to say. Can I guess what you're going to say? Because I noticed it as well. You're going to say that Gabriel kind of tugged at Martinelli, didn't he, his shorts, because he couldn't understand what the fuck she was saying, so that Martinelli could answer the question. Yeah, it was lovely. It was lovely.
It was really sweet. It was like he won't realise that actually his whole body's in shot and he's just nudging his mate to answer questions for him just to get him away. It was very, very sweet. So yeah, good on him. But yeah, maybe he doesn't even still realize. Maybe he still thinks he scored two goals.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know at what point. If he's on a goal bonus and he checks at the end of the month, maybe he'll realize when he starts to wonder why it's not there. But it was another example of Arsenal sharing the goals out, wasn't it? Which is
Dean. Well, I mean, Gabriel. Someone pointed out on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. Prominent Arsenal fan. I should have made note saying Gabriel has been one of the best signings of recent history. I think that's true. I think it's something that I admit I haven't fully kind of thought about. But he has been Mr. Reliable, hasn't he? Through thick and thin, through bad times, through good times, always a danger on plates, on corners like that. He seems like a good guy as well. Like, you know, from the fact he clearly can't understand, doesn't speak English that well. But we have to hail him, don't we, to some extent, I think.
Yeah, I think he's very, very dependable. He's available most weeks. You know, he plays most games, which is the key quality for any player, right? You know, being available and playing most of the fixtures throughout the season. I think he was one of the first proper signings we made under the kind of new leadership with Arteta and Edu taking the reins. And but he's been great. I think the reason he doesn't get the plaudits that he should get is because of the man standing next to him is just a Rolls Royce of a centre-back. And you can understand why he gets a lot of attention just by the way he plays. He has more, I'd say, highlight reel moments, Willy Saliba, in comparison to Gabriel. But I love Gabby's aggression in both boxes more than anything. You know, he attacks the ball. And Arteta made a good point. There's no reason why Saliba shouldn't be, you know, equally as aggressive from set pieces. And, you know, we scored the most goals from set pieces this season. We would all love to see more goals from open play. But if we can marry up the two and become, you know, a really powerful team from set pieces, then, yeah, it just gives us that extra dimension, doesn't it? But, yeah, agree with your point. I think he's been great for us since signing. Good value for money as well. What was it, 30-odd million?
Mm.
I think if you were to price him up nowadays, you're looking at a centre-back worth 60 or 70 million quid.
Oh, easily. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
You talk about Gabriel there and how solid and this and that, and yet, you know, cast our mind back to the opening day of the season, and he wasn't starting, was
right,
he?
Right, good point. Yeah,
that seems unreal
now, doesn't it? Like, what the fuck is anyone? I'd like someone to ask us. What was that all about?
Great man management.
Right,
come on the bench for a couple games. You know, mistakes, Gabriel. Be better on the ball and look at it. It's worked the treat. No, I think the reality is Arteta had some, you know, creative thinking in mind in terms of, you know, getting an extra midfielder into play by having Thomas Partey at right back and almost playing with three centre backs and going man for man against most teams at the back. But I think most of us would agree we're happy to see Gabriel in the starting 11, even though it probably injury for that to come about.
100%. What do we make? We should address some people have said, in fact, I think Roy Hodgson said both goals were fouls by our, you know, and he did climb over. I mean, there is Gary Neville posted a picture of the first goal and his hands on the defenders, comparing it to the famous Newcastle goal that was scored against us, and saying, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Is there, what do we make of those? Is it the same? Is it the same kind of foul? Should it, you know, or was he just, he was definitely climbing on the defender, using him, as they were saying, slightly ambiguously on the match coverage. What did you make of both? Was there any case for that they were fouls? Dean, going to you first.
After you, sir. You know what? I've not seen the goals back. since watching the game live yesterday afternoon. Mm. But from my position, I'm so far away from it. I'm the other side of the ground.
This is very Arsene Wenger.
Post-match
interview.
I'm just trying to figure out who scored most of the time. Is that
right? It was quite far away.
But Boyd gets home and watches the whole 2 hours back. Never mind watching the goals back, Dean. And I'm like, I'll watch the highlights back. So we've got all three options here.
Josh.
You don't watch anything.
More than that, highlights post-match. TNC Sport has an hour and a half build-up now. They start on the Saturday morning game. They start at 11 o'clock.
When you've got Martin Keown on the telly, then you do want to watch an hour and a half. Quite right. Everyone else only needs half an hour.
True.
True. I love Martin so much.
Of course.
I thought he was climbing a little bit, Gabriel, and certainly one of them where if it's given, I don't think it's overturned. So I think it was in that grey area of probably slightly fortunate, but admittedly not enough to probably overturn it. So you can understand Hodgson's frustrations, and maybe it's easier for Hodgson to start banging on about that than it is to sort of accept how roundly beaten they were, and the fans are making their protests. How do they get that banner in? I swear, I'm not objecting. They're welcome to do their banners. It's just like, I don't know how they get these big banners in.
Also, that banner was so funny, I thought, because the wording was so kind of like civilized. It was like weak decisions. I was like, these people, I feel like, need a slight lesson in activism. You imagine people like marching through London going, weak decisions. It's not
wasted potential on and off the pitch, weak decisions taking us backwards.
I mean,
plenty of banner, that's for sure. I agree. How have they got that into the stadium? They're very civil of them. And looking at social media, I think they're not too pleased with the ownership, are they? And they should never have sacked Patrick Vieira, if you ask me.
Well, exactly. Yeah, but that was the... Patrick Vieira did brilliantly, didn't he? Really? I mean, he had he started... That shows you how stupid these things can be when you get rid of it.
It's like short-term decision versus, long-term ban and all that.
They showed Mark Bright in the crowd, sitting next to whoever, what's his name, the chairman, is it? And Mark Bright, I've never seen Mark Bright look so grumpy in his life. He looked absolutely, obviously just seeing his team beaten 5-0 and he'd seen this banner unfurled and everything, but he looked super grumpy. Go on.
Yeah, Steve Parrish is the man you're looking for. Mark Bright would have been there, I guess, in the Crystal Palace ambassadorial role. I think he's pretty much there come rain or shine for Palace around the country. What face are you supposed to pull when it was funny
just you're to watch
hoping
that whole,
the camera do, is not coming yeah. on
do,
to you.
Do you practice your TV face now, Josh, just in case?
Absolutely. Would have been in a bit pretty much the seat a few along from where I was the other week. I noticed George Graham was there. Did you see that?
Absolutely.
Mikel
yeah.
was asked, I think, by Miguel Delaney, who I'm a big fan of, I might be wrong, was asked in the post-match press conference, making reference to the fact that Arsenal had scored two corners, whether Arteta had ever had a discussion with George Graham, and who was, of course, so well known for the success that we had from corners back in the day. And Mikel answered as if it was a bit of a silly question, but he went, no, I haven't had the opportunity. It was quite, he sort of shut him down. Yeah. But I thought it was I like the idea of it. But good to see George there.
Lovely, yeah.
Back at the club. I think Kenny Sampson was there as well. He was on the pitch before the game. Yeah. George Graham, 79. I've just Googled 79. Good thing.
Wow. Have you spoken to him? Either of you two, George?
I have met George. I wasn't there. I'm always feeling like we might have been together.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. Because I cut you out. There was a photo and I cut out. I took a photo of George and someone else and I cut the other person out. I can't remember who it was now.
He was hugely successful.
He was, but let me just say, I spoke to him for about 2 minutes, and he was as scary then as he was back in the glory days when he was a terrifying figure. I think for many of the players and supporters, but very fair. Someone also pointed out on Twitter that he probably didn't need a set piece coach back in his day. He was the best set piece coach, I imagine.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, did you see that as well? Yeah. I guess it's time to take a break. After the break, I'm going to go back. I guess we haven't answered the question, which is, does that performance, does that victory mean we don't need any more signings? Let's think about that after this break. And we're back from the break. Yeah, I mean, I still feel, I have to say, when Dean, I noticed you tweeted about the Liverpool performance. I just watched that Liverpool 4-0 victory over Bournemouth at Bournemouth. I watched that with my Liverpool sporting mate. And it's quite clear, and that's without Salah, and it's quite clear they have a very, very effective forward line that they can call upon. With like Diogo Jota, for example, he's like a brilliant finisher. And I just don't, we're now competing with them, who are top of the league by 5 points, and Man City, I think. I think it is the three of us competing. Hopefully Spurs will fall away quite soon and Villa similarly. But I feel like that's a massive advantage for them. Like, they didn't even play that well in the first half, and then they just stepped up a gear, scored four goals in about 20, 25 minutes. And I'm not sure we're capable of that in that similar situation, in a way. I mean, I know we won 5-0 yesterday, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, it's a different kind of goal-scoring threat I think Liverpool have. The way I would describe them, it's not clinical, because they do, I think they've missed the most yeah. big chances in the Premier League this season, right?
Right.
And they create their fair share, but they're just potent. They're just so direct and influential in the final third. They get bodies forward, they create chaos, and, you know, whether it's a ball breaking to one of their players, or they're getting a shot on target, or they're just making sure that, you know, there's enough pressure. It just feels like when Liverpool go forward, something's going to happen, because it's almost so chaotic and there's so many moving parts. Yeah. Whereas we're very well orchestrated, and it's like a conductor, you know, going from side to side. It almost has to be the perfect goal at times. So that's why they're such a threat. It's so hard to plan against, so hard to defend against, because you just don't know what the pattern of play is going to be, because they're so direct. And that's a credit to Klopp and his style of football. But, you know, the two times we've played them, you know, we've kept their expected goals, which is obviously the stat of today, under one, which not many teams have done this season or achieved. So whilst they are like very potent, very direct, look like they could score loads of goals, I don't necessarily think they're that clinical. And I think if you do defend well against them, you know, you've got a good chance of beating them, because they do concede goals as well.
No, it's obviously a brilliant result for them today. I hadn't really clocked, certainly coming out the stadium yesterday, our next game at home is against them, right?
We
have an absolute chance to turn this league title, you know, around, so to speak. You know, if we can go and beat them, and you'd say failing to beat them is, you know, were we to lose, were they to repeat what they did to us in the FA Cup, and it's 8 points by then you really fear that is going to be incredibly difficult to turn around. But if we can turn it around and beat them, and, you know, do some of what Dean has just said on there and limit their opportunities, then that's quite exciting. We just got the small matter of Nottingham Forest away in the meantime. But you're right, boy. It's absolutely a three-way title, and maybe people were still in a Arsenal have only got to get above Man City to win the league. But I think Liverpool are proving that might not be the case.
Oh, completely. And I think Dean makes a really good point about the Liverpool attack, the fact that they move around, those players are moving around, swapping positions all the time. And it is chaotic. And it's interesting, because it's almost like Arteta doesn't want our players to do that. He doesn't like the chaos. He wants them, it's Martinelli or Trossard hugging the touchline, Saka hugging the other touchline, as you say, then, you know, Ben White on the overlap. It's like, it's so familiar. And part of me does think, again, that when it is such fine margins, to use that cliche, the difference between having a very unpredictable attack and having a very predictable attack, albeit effective, as you say, we usually do find that magical way through, don't we? When we face it, I mean, we didn't face the low block as much against Palace, but we do so often. Often we find our way through, or we had until recent weeks. But I do worry that's such, and obviously Man City have got it as well. I mean, so. I guess what I'm saying is, surely we do need to buy another forward, don't we?
I tweeted before the game yesterday that, tongue in cheek, that, you know, Saka and Martinelli will be what Mane and Salah were a few years ago in their prime and peak at Liverpool. And I think if we can get them to firing, and you know, Martinelli doubled his goal tally, as Josh said, and we can hopefully see him in a more confident mode moving forward. If we can get them to firing, if we can get 20 goals out of them two in the next, or the last 17 games of the season, or whatever we've got left, will we need another striker between now and the end of the season? Probably not. But we're relying on them to kind of almost...
That's a big if, isn't it?
Exactly, right? I mean, two players finding the form that they had last season. So if they can, then I think we can score enough goals I think we can score enough goals. But I think ultimately the way that we create attacks, the way that we build attacks is based on that controlled system that Arteta likes. And it's not necessarily to control the way we attack. It's more that the player's in the right position when we lose the ball so that we go back and we don't get caught in transition. Whereas Klopp's more than happy to almost accept that he will get caught in transition every now and then because Liverpool will score more goals than you. But I think if you were to ask most Arsenal fans, do we need another forward option this window? Yes. But the reality is we're not going to have it. So our best bet is to get our two wide men firing at their best, scoring goals, creating assists. And then I think we're in with a chance.
I guess one of the plus points about not selling, as you say, it's quite clear. It seems quite clear that we cannot buy unless we sell. Is it like, you know, due to financial fair play or whatever it's called now? Which, by the way, that makes me... The fact that so many teams are hampered right now in this window and can't spend the kind of money they want to spend. I'm not saying there shouldn't be these rules, but it really highlights the outrageousness of the Man City situation, isn't it? That they've, you know, their 115 alleged breaks, rule breaks, are not going to be dealt with for ages and ages and ages. Meanwhile, everyone else has to scramble around making sure they don't break the rules.
And it just shows you, boy, the impact of action. Like they've taken action against Everton, deducted 10 points, and now everybody's super scared to break the rules because actually the Premier League are taking action for people who do break them. But I do agree, as much as, you know, there's a process and, you know, there's legal elements to what needs to take place, it doesn't look good for the Premier League that, you know, Everton's and your Forest are being charged pretty quickly, whereas, you know, the big boys seem to be getting away with it for the time being.
Yeah. But what I was going on to say was that the only plus one about us not selling anyone is we're not selling Emile Smith Rowe. And it was great to see, but one of the highlights of the game for me was him coming on with at least 25 minutes to show what he could do. And I thought he made an instant impact. And he's kind of like, and he does what a lot of those Liverpool players do, which he gets rid of the ball. He can turn with the ball, run and run at people. Or just, you know, dribble, run at speed, run at pace, find gaps. He is one of the more chaotic players that we've got in, I mean, causing chaos against the opposition. And I still think, and I know Arteta's been asked about it, and I think he's acknowledged, he said, you know, paid lip service to the fact he wants to give him more minutes and more time. But that's key for me. It's like, I just think he's a better bet. I think he's a better bet than Trossard, for example, you know. But what do you reckon? It was good to see him getting more time, wasn't it, Josh, on Saturday, at least?
He has had such limited opportunity. He started the game against Sheffield United, that 5-0, but that was back at the end of October. Not started a Premier League game since. And I think it's now... Yeah, he had 21 minutes yesterday and he'd only had 12 minutes in two other separate appearances going back to October. So, yeah, he's still only on 137 minutes for the season, which is mind-boggling, really, when you consider... how he has been perceived at certain points during his Arsenal career. Yeah, I thought he looked fresh. He looked positive. He went forward. I mean, I thought even in that, you know, 10, 11 minutes he got against West Ham when he came on, he was trying to, you know, be on the front foot and be positive. But you just wonder, I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves, but come the end of a season, it just can't be another year where we walk in with Nketiah, Smith Rowe, and Nelson all just cruising into next year's squad and getting the same impact that they've had this season. I think they're going to have to be some decisions this summer.
Mm. Yeah. Eddie had a good ball, didn't he? He made the first of Martinez's goals, didn't he? I think with a pretty good pass, Dean. So I'll give him credit for that.
In front of his suitors as well, who've had a look at him this window and would be interested in signing him in the summer. I think if Palace stay up, which I think they will. But I agree with Josh. I think we're going to see the back of a couple of homegrown players, which will be sad because I think we all like to see academy players do well and break into the first team, but I think that's just the reality of it. They probably need to be moved on for decent money, hopefully. You know, they're on good contracts. And then we can reinvest in areas that we really need it.
Do you have any insider, you know, kind of thoughts on why Emile Smith Rowe has had such few opportunities under Arteta in recent times?
Fitness has been a big part of it. I think people forget that he's actually been injured quite a bit as well. Like, I don't think he was completely fit at the start of the season. The Sheffield United game, Josh referenced, he picked up a knee injury in the first half. Bless him. He was so determined to carry on. He ended up making it a bit worse. And then he was out ever since then and only returned to the squad just after Christmas, I think. So I think a part of it's been injury. I think part of it's been overall fitness. Look, I think all of us would love to see him in that eight role because he takes the ball on the half turn. He lets it roll across his body. He helps us move through the phases much quicker. He's much more direct than a Havertz, for example, in that role. But the issue will come down to, in that position, can Mikel trust him in the defensive duels from a fitness point of view to be able to get back in and into position from a mobility standpoint? I think that's the big issues with Emil Smith Rowe in that position. It's, you know, can he do the other side of the game, which Havertz clearly does, because we know what he can do going forward. And yeah, I think it's been a combination of fitness, just not giving him the opportunity to get a run, get form, and make him, you know, make his name for himself in the team. And as a result, he's got limited minutes. And yeah, unless something drastic happens in the second half of the season, you know, let's say Havertz gets injured and then Smith Rowe becomes the number one option for that eight role. You know, I think in the summer there's probably going to be some changes there.
I also think that to some extent it's, you know, we spent 65 million on Havertz. And I always think that when you do spend that amount of money on a player and you've got a homegrown player who could arguably do as well, if not better, in that role, that the manager very much sticks with the man he spent that amount of money on, just to kind of prove that he was right all along. Do you know what I mean? I feel like I'm still not convinced. Did Havertz contribute a massive amount? I don't know. Maybe, I mean, slightly. It hasn't quite, for me, fully turned the corner into convincing us that he's a key player who could help us, you know, kind of challenge for the title, really.
It was very good against Brighton before Christmas.
Yes, like, he had a
very good game, scored a goal, and I thought that was the turning point. But then even Liverpool away, he was very good, I thought. Won a lot of his duels, was very influential in that match. But then obviously when you have a bad run of results, your first players that get scapegoated are the ones that people don't love. It's the players who've had a poor start to the season, so fingers get pointed at them very quickly. So I think we forget that actually before those poor runs, that poor run of results, he was actually coming into a good vein of form, and I thought he was fine yesterday. I don't think
he was fine,
wrong with his performance, but we also have to think of it from our perspective, Boyd. Yes, the club spent 65 million quid on Havertz, so they're almost like determined to make that work. We all love Emil Smith Rowe, so we've maybe got like rose tinted glasses on when we think about him and his performances too, and we want him to be successful, maybe ahead of Havertz because of that. So definitely goes both ways. I think we're going to stick with Havertz for the foreseeable.
And you also highlighted Zinchenko's performance on Saturday, which I thought he was fantastic. I thought he was great. Now, here's the question, though, because you showed us various stats. He was, you know, which proved how good he was.
I love incredible. I love watching him play as well. I just think he's such a fantastic footballer to watch.
Yeah, but there is always that nagging thing about against the big teams, can he defend? And he is at fault, isn't he? A lot of the time, like you can take the ball off him, you can go past him. And, you know, people like Alan Algo are very critical of him, you know. And he was great. I think he can be great against in this kind of situation when they give it, you know, but I'm still not convinced against Liverpool, say, that that's going to work.
Yeah. I need to verify this, but somebody did tweet me saying we've conceded more goals down the right hand side than down the left hand side since the start of last season. Okay. So I'll need to check that stat. So don't quote me on it just yet. But I understand it. And I think the issue with Zinchenko is when he makes a mistake, it's a glaring mistake, right? It's pretty obvious. He's not like he's out of position and a cross comes in and somebody scores. It's more he's given the ball away or he's been beaten too easily by the winger. So we remember it. But when he's in the team, we are a much, much better side. And I'd have him start every home game with no issue. And the majority of away games, there were some games where I'd like to have a Tomiyasu or a Timber in there instead. But I would say, of the poor run of results we've had in the last few weeks, Boyd, the one bad performance out of all of them was Fulham. I actually thought we were fine against West Ham. Yeah. It was terrible in both boxes. We were fine Liverpool away. We were actually good Liverpool at home in the first half and should have been 2-0 up before conceding, you know, an own goal and then a last-minute goal that didn't really mean anything. You know, the player we missed the most, I think, was the game that we were poorest was the Fulham game. That game we never had Zinchenko. And when we didn't have Zinchenko, we don't have Zinchenko, we lack control in games. I think, you know, we don't keep possession as well. We don't rotate the ball as well as we could. And I just think he makes a big difference to our side. So I'd have him for his positive qualities in the side 80-85% of the time. And then in the big away games where you're coming up against the world-class winger, let's get Tomiyasu in there. Let's get Timber in there. And you don't have to play him every week anyway, right? I think Zinchenko hasn't got the concentration to be playing every week anyway. So you play him two games, you leave him on the bench one. That's not a problem. No, I'm not obsessed with playing the same players every single game. You know, Guardiola's shown that you don't need to play every player in the same position every week to be a successful team. So, yeah, I'd have him in my side most of the time, Boyd. I think.
I think I would as well. Yeah, I think I agree. Josh, I mean, I think his the drawbacks of him are so glaringly obvious. It's like, not like, you know, Arteta isn't aware of what can happen, and maybe he's, you know, he just needs to work harder in certain situations. It's also to do with what we do with him, you know, the fact he does go so far forward into midfield, and he always is going to leave that gap, isn't he, to some extent. But yeah, I really like him. Yeah, I think I probably wouldn't play him in same as you, actually. I think I wouldn't play him in those big games. Sometimes even at home, I might not play him. But Josh.
Well, it's fascinating to think back to that again, that opening day, and Timber starting the season at left back, and wondering what was the plan for the whole campaign. And
yeah,
Thomas Partey at right back and Timber at left back, Ben White at centre back ahead of Gabriel. It's fascinating to think what could have been this season. I think you've summed up, boy. We know the pros, we know the cons, and we've been caught out at times. It felt like we've almost been targeted, not least at Liverpool, where eventually it worked for them and Salah got their goal against him, and you felt that was the likely way it was going to go. But Arteta has turned to alternatives at points this season, hasn't he? I think Kiwior has probably played a little bit more, you know, or certainly been given a handful of starts that maybe wouldn't have necessarily expected. So there have obviously been moments where Arteta has decided there are better options, but if we're talking about who should be playing most of the time, I think it is hard to make an argument away from Zinchenko because of what he could do. And it looks from the outside like he's a very popular member of the squad as well. And look, he clearly cares, and the passion he talks about, and bringing a little bit of that Man City winning mentality to this squad. And I think he. I'm with you. The pros probably just about outweigh the cons. But as and when Timber is back, I think there could be a really interesting situation there. Now, talking of Timber, Dean, did you spot this about these Adidas Predators that Timber was handing out? Boy, did you get down to the armory to try and nab yourself a pair of £19.99 Predators?
I missed that. No, I know I didn't. But what's he doing?
Did you follow this, Dean?
Yeah, I saw it. As soon as I saw it, I sent it to my friends who live a bit more local than me around the ground. One went over there actually, but by the time he got there was already a massive queue. But was it handing out like cheap Predators or something?
Yeah, I think it was a partnership between ProDirect and Adidas, and they basically slowly, on social media, I think the day before, gave clues. And basically, yeah, it was the first time I've sort of seen Timber in quite a while. But he was there as many came to try and nab themselves a pair of these cheap Predators, which was also a launch to the fact that there is a new Predator boot out. But I didn't know, Boyd, if you're still, you know, doing your 5 and 7 aside, you know, on a Tuesday night, that you wanted your new Preds for.
They suit you, Boyd.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, 11 aside every Sunday, obviously.
What's your position, boy?
I think I kind of like full back, yeah. Kind of, you know, I think I can play.
Well, like Zinchenko.
A bit like Zinchenko, yeah. Maybe not so good when I'm going advancing into midfield positions, but yeah. Solid traditional old school fullback, I think, I'd say.
Kieran Tierney style.
Yeah, Kieran Tierney style, exactly. Yeah.
Just on Timber, actually. Josh, have you heard any murmurs or rumours of his imminent return to a matchday squad, which would be remarkable? You know, I've heard a few rumours, or I would say actually stronger than rumours, about how he's progressing. But I wonder if you've heard anything on the grapevine.
I think he's been asked, hasn't he, in some of these press conferences, what the situation is. And he's sort of being sort of lukewarm, isn't he, in terms of, I guess they just don't want to put pressure, right? On the situation. I think he... Let me just recap what he said here. Arteta was asked about seeing Timber on the grass in Dubai. Despite rumours of return next month on social media, Arteta was keen to ground expectations, but did provide some hope we may see the Dutchman before the end of the season. So I think that's really been the tone, because he said there is a possibility when asked if he would play again this season, but at the moment he's really far away from competing. That's a realistic picture of it. We're hopeful he can have an impact at the end of the season if everything goes well. It looks like there's a chance that can happen, but it's too early to make that call. So, hopefully, for that vital run in, for those big 5-6 games on the way to winning the title, Timber is back.
More importantly, is Declan Rice. Do we have any update on Declan? Because he mouthed Hammy, didn't he? Very, very, very visibly when he was taken off. And I wonder whether that's like, you know, often players feel their hamstring, but it doesn't mean that the hamstring's gone and that he's going to be out for the next 6 months. So, but do you have any update on that? Because that would be a fucking disaster.
I imagine it's one that becomes, well, and also the fact there isn't an Arsenal game. You know, we don't have a press conference, I guess, until, I imagine the day before the Nottingham Forest game, probably that Monday. So I don't think we'll get an update straight away. But if it was particularly bad news, I suspect we'll know in the next day or two. But it certainly felt more precaution. And when you're 3-0 up, you don't even think about taking risks, do you? And that was the same with Gabriel. So it's a bit hard.
But if he gets injured,
that is... but you're right. They definitely said Hammy.
Yeah. I want to mention the worst. Just to think about the warm weather break that we had in where was it? Dubai? Was it Dubai?
Yes, Dubai.
And of course, I want to point out the worst thing about the whole thing. You know what I'm going to say here? Do you know what I'm referring to?
Nazareth Steak Restaurant.
Yes. Thank you. Indeed.
We'll agree on that.
Do not, Mikael, if you're listening, and I know you're probably tempted to listen to a lot of podcasts. There's a lot of Arsenal podcasts out there, but I'm sure this is the one you listen to if you listen to any. Do not associate yourself with that fucking Salt Bay idiot. It's like, what was he thinking? And the funniest thing about it was that all Arsenal fans, I didn't see anyone defending him. No one was going, oh yeah, that's a good thing to be shown.
Indefensible. And you can see the look in his eyes. He instantly regrets what's just happened. I can imagine it's such an awkward position to be in. He's in there, he's giving you the whole show, and then he just thrust that upon you. What do you do? Do you say no? You turn the blade away?
Yeah, for sure he looks embarrassed. He looks so embarrassed. I mean, why is he in the restaurant in the first place? Because you run the risk. Because
don't go to the restaurant.
This is the man who ran on the, you know, who wants to be around the World Cup and make it all about him, never mind Messi. I mean, if a man is dangling a knife with a meat over you, you could just point at your plate and go, thanks so much, mate. I'll put that on my plate. When you put your mouth to his knife, it's...
Imagine how heroic it would have been if he told him to piss off, though. I mean, that would have been like, he would have, you know, sealed his reputation. And it led to, what's really funny is it led to this, was the headline in the Mail, which the Mail is brilliant at long. Mikel Arteta shares cringeworthy exchange with Salt Bay as Arsenal fans joke, the restaurant experience costs more than buying Ivan Toney after viral Dubai interaction during warm weather training trip. That was the headline. That was one headline in the Mail's coverage of, I like how they managed to bring in Ivan Toney warm weather training.
The only thing in defence of Mikel Arteta in the situation is, if I recall right, it looks like his son appears at one point doing the salt thing.
Really?
And maybe I like to think the son was really keen on meeting this fella, and therefore Arteta was actually just being a good dad, right? And just trying to entertain his son in some way. That's if I want to look through a very positive lens on this. Yeah. But yeah, generally it was a little bit cringeworthy. Boyd, have you ever been to one of his... There is one in London, isn't there, Boyd?
I think so, yeah. Do you know what? I actually might have been. Someone took me once for for a business lunch at a really expensive steak restaurant. And I don't know whether... Because I don't think Salt Bay was a thing at the time, but it was definitely like, had a similar kind of thing, aura to it, shall we say. And it was horrendous. Obviously, I don't even eat meat, so it was completely lost on me. But Boyd, I haven't been to what
you're criticizing Mikel here while at the same time just saying you spend most of your evenings at Nusa Et Steakhouse in Knightsbridge, which has an average rating of 3 star on Google.
Did you say 1 star?
3 star. But I mean, like, if you've got 3 star off 1,445 reviews, that's
not great.
It kind of suggests there might be. I'm just reading just one out here. After visiting the Nusret in Bodrum, I thought I'd give this one a try. Very disappointed with the whole experience. I can now see why it has an average of 2.9 stars. So it's obviously just gone up. Mm. And if they don't up their game, I won't be surprised if this place no longer exists in 12 months. Well, maybe Mikel will be seen there in coming weeks.
Please God, no.
If we win 5-0 after every time he goes there, I think we'll have to send them there every week.
Oh, God, Boyd, don't say that.
If Mikel Arteta said, I have been listening to the pod, and yeah. I'd love to take you for dinner, but we've got to go for dinner at Steakhouse in Knightsbridge, would you attend?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. I have no principles. Yeah, like many people you could think of, you know, no one in particular, I have no principles when it comes to... I don't think I'd ever go to the one in Dubai, though. I don't think I'd ever set foot in Dubai ever in my life. I think that's my general feeling. I mean, you know, I find the whole idea completely horrendous, to be fair. So yeah, you won't find me doing that. Nor Saudi Arabia, nor Qatar. I'm ruling out my presence in any of those places right now. Just to say, you look shocked, Josh. Oh, you're about to go somewhere like that.
I've been to Dubai. I think I'm going to Dubai again
for the World Cup. Oh, I think that's different. I think you had to go with your people for the World Cup. That's different.
Oh, don't have to defend me, Boyd. We can fall out and never speak again. This was great doing the podcast. It's been an amazing 8-9 years.
Don't say
but we've fallen out over your refusal to go to Dubai. Really, the person to blame for the whole of the podcast.
My one man boycott. It's all down to Salt Bay. Yeah. Here's the final question before we go to predictions for the. By the way, the schedule is mad, isn't it? Like, why have we got to wait like nearly 2 weeks to our next?
Because we're out of the FA Cup.
Okay.
And obviously, you have to allow that most of the Premier League teams, and of course, most of the Premier teams are in the Premier League. So we've got the extra time off, but then we go into the midweek. Games which are all going to be on the Tuesday, Wednesday, all those games I believe are on TNT, or the majority are on TNT. You can catch Martin Keown as part of the coverage of Nottingham Forest Arsenal. I'm going up to Nottingham, very much looking
exclusive
forward to that, and then of course we've got the weekend games.
The other thing I was saying, I don't just mean us. I mean, generally, the schedule's mad. Like, Man City haven't got a league game for, like, months, practically. It's really weird. I heard that, I think the stat is, Liverpool play 8 games in a month, and Man City play 3. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. But
I
heard
City are back on the Wednesday. They've got Burnley on the Wednesday. Okay. I mean, obviously, they had the situation of going to the Club World Cup, so that's why, you know, they're a little bit behind. But don't worry, Man City... and Arsenal, of course, will have their Champions League back in February. So be pretty busy again pretty soon.
Is anyone going to Porto, by the way? Are you flying to Porto, Dean?
Not myself this time, but I will be there. Looking forward to it. We'll also be at Forest, not quite as glamorous next week. But looking forward to Porto. Good draw for us, I think. So
yeah.
Or are you going to Porto?
We're thinking about it. We're mulling it over, the group that I'm with. Yeah, I don't think we've taken any firm decision yet. What about you?
It's a good thing you've got such brilliant connections that you don't have to worry about tickets and you can stroll out and you'll get that private plane revved up from whatever place you keep it Monday to Friday.
No, I'm not saying we'll succeed in if we do try and go.
No, you keep me posted, boys. Me posted.
Yeah.
Dean is flying out there, but not flying himself.
No, not
right,
flying
this time.
Yeah.
Dean, what's the longest distance you've ever flown?
I think it's from Lons is probably the furthest distance that I've flown so far. About in terms of nautical miles or hours. Yeah, probably Lons, but
Dean was the only one hoping for PSG. Just thought it'd be convenient, didn't he?
West coast of Europe, please, Champions League people. Okay.
Good. We better predict, Boyd, what's going to happen in Nottingham Forest.
Nottingham Forest away, Tuesday the 30th of January, 7:30 p.m. Well, I'm going to come to you first, Dean.
Well, we play first, as in we play before everyone else. I think everyone else plays on the Wednesday primarily, we're on the Tuesday, so an opportunity to put points on the board first again, which is good. We've actually struggled at Forest away the last few times, haven't we? We lost there in the cup. See, we lost there last season as well, towards the back end when Nottingham Forest confirmed their survival, and that was pretty much it for the title race for us as well. You guys, I'm an optimist, and I think on the back of yesterday's performance, we should hopefully do the business. But yeah, look, let's hope Declan Rice is there and available, because I think that makes a big difference in these kind of away games. But I'll go for a solid 2-0 away win.
Forest, of course, complaining, by the way, aren't they, to PGMOL about the Ivan Toney shifting of the ball 8 centimetres, which is quite comical, I think. I saw you asked Dean whether his performance matched, you know, the fact that I thought he was really good, I have to say. For a player who hasn't played competitive football for that amount of time, I thought he was really, really good. It does remind you, he is a really excellent player because he's technically really good. He's also, he has got really good strike rate, and he's a massive guy, and he kind of causes pandemonium. So he has got it all, really. I think it kind of makes sense that he's going to cost as much as he is going to cost whoever buys him in the end.
And he couldn't be advertising himself more, could he? But good luck to him. And I mean, Forest need to have a look at themselves. And I'm afraid don't think our former goalkeeper crowned himself in glory, terrible, much as terrible, I really like
terrible
Matt Turner. And he, talking of Dubai, was incredibly friendly to me in Dubai when Arsenal were doing their post when players went out the World Cup and they were all in Dubai.
He recognised a fellow.
I won't criticise him.
Well, he recognised a fellow staunch Jewish Arsenal fan.
He's a member of the community, absolutely. I think it really felt like the Forest Wall should have clocked on what was...
Oh, 100%. Was, you know. Terrible.
Anyway, Forest have been better under Nuno, so I think it is a challenging game, but there's not that much room for error if we are going to stick in this title race. So I think we will stick in there with a 2-1 win, I think, Boyd.
Yeah, we have to win. Yeah, we do have to win. So I'll go... I'm going to go 3-2. I think it might be a bit hectic. Helter-skelter, yeah. Because Forest, they do pretty hectic in that game. Yeah, so we'll see. Thank you so much, Dean, for taking time out of your Sunday evening. Thank you. And to Josh as ever. And yeah, we won't be back for a while because of this epic break between now and the Forest game. But, you know, we can all chillax, and maybe there'll be some transfer speculation we can follow. Who knows? See you then. Bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.